Section 15 of Animal Heroes. Animal Heroes by Ernest Thompson Seton. The Legend of the White Reindeer.
Skål, skål, for Norway, skål, sing ye the song of the Vandam Troll, when I am hiding Norway's luck, on a white store buck comes riding, riding.
Bleak, black, deep and cold is Utrovand, a long pocket of glacial water, a crack in the globe, a wrinkle in the high Norwegian mountains, blocked with another mountain and flooded with a frigid flood 3,000 feet above its mother sea, and yet no closer to its father's sun. Around its cheerless shore is a belt of stunted trees that sends a long tail up the high valley, till it dwindles away to sticks and moss, as it also does some halfway up the granite hills that rise 1,000 feet, encompassing the lake. This is the limit of trees, the end of the growth of wood. The birch and the willow are the last to drop out of the long fight with frost. Their miniature thickets are noisy with the cries of fieldfare, pipit, and ptarmigan, but these are left behind on nearing the upper plateau, where shade of rock and sough of wind are all that take their place. The chilly Hoifjeld rolls away, a rugged, rocky plain, with great patches of snow in all the deeper hollows, and the distance blocked by snowy peaks that rise and roll in whiter gleam till dim and dazzling in the north, uplifts the Jotunheim, the home of spirits, of glaciers, and of the lasting snow. The treeless stretch is one vast attest to the force of heat. Each failure of the sun by one degree is marked by a lower realm of life. The northern slope of each hollow is less boreal than its southern side. The pine and spruce have given out long ago. The mountain ash went next. The birch and willow climbed up half the slope. Here, nothing grows but creeping plants and moss. The plain itself is pale grayish-green, one vast expanse of reindeer moss, but warmed at spots into orange by great beds of polytrichum, and, in sunnier nooks, deepened to a herbal green. The rocks that are scattered everywhere are of delicate lilac, but each is variegated with spreading frill-edged plasters of gray-green lichen or orange powder streaks and beauty spots of black. These rocks have great power to hold the heat, so that each of them is surrounded by a little belt of heat-loving plants that could not otherwise live so high. Dwarfed representatives of the birch and willow both are here, hugging the genial rock, as an old French habitant hugs his stove in wintertime, spreading their branches over it instead of in the frigid air. A foot away is seen a chillier belt of heath, and farther off, colder, where none else can grow, is the omnipresent gray-green reindeer moss that gives its color to the upland. The hollows are still filled with snow, though now it is June, but each of these white expanses is shrinking, spending itself in ice-cold streams that somehow reach the lake. These snowflakes show no sign of life, not even the red snow tinge, and around each is a belt of barren earth to testify that life and warmth can never be divorced. Birdless and lifeless, the gray-green snow-pied waste extends over all the stretch that is here between the timberline and the snowline, above which winter never quits its hold. Farther north, both come lower, till the timberline is at the level of the sea, and all the land is in that treeless belt called the tundra in the old world, and barrens in the new, and that everywhere is the home of the reindeer, the realm of the reindeer moss. 1. In and out it flew, in and out, over the water and under, as the Varsimle, the leader dove of the reindeer herd, walked past on the vernal banks. And it sang,
Skål, skål, gamle Norge skål, and more about a white reindeer and Norway's good luck, as though the singer were gifted with special insight. When old Sveggum built the Van Dam on the lower Hoyfeld, just above the Utrovand, and set his Ribsten a-going, he supposed that he was the owner of it all. But someone was there before him, and in and out of the spouting stream this someone dashed and sang songs that he made up to fit the place and the time. He skipped from shiga to shiga of the wheel, did many things which Sveggum could set down only to luck, whatever that is. And some said that Sveggum's luck was a wheel troll, a water fairy, with a brown coat and a white beard, one that lived on land or in water as he pleased. But most of Sveggum's neighbors saw only a Fosca, the little waterfall bird that came each year and danced in the stream, or dived where the pool is deep. It may be both are right, for some of the very oldest peasants will tell you that a fairy troll may take the form of a man or the form of a bird. Only this bird lived a life no bird can live, and sang songs that men never had sung in Norway. Wonderful vision had he, and sights he saw that man never saw, for the field fare would build before him, and the lemming fed its brood under his very eyes. Eyes were they to see, for the dark speck on Sulonten that man could barely glimpse was a reindeer, with half-shed coat. To him, in the green slime on the Vandren, was beautiful green pasture of a banquet spread. Oh, man is so blind, and makes himself so hated, but Fosca harmed none, so none were afraid of him. Only he sang, and his songs were sometimes mixed with fun and prophecy, or perhaps a little scorn. From the top of the tassel birch, he could mark the course of the Van Dam stream past the Nystuen hamlet to lose itself in the gloomy waters of Utrovand, or by a higher flight he could see across the barren upland that rolled to Jotunheim in the north. The great awakening was on now. The springtime had already reached the woods. The valleys were athrob with life. New birds coming from the south, winter sleepers reappearing, and the reindeer that had wintered in the lower woods should soon again be seen on the uplands. Not without a fight do the frost giants give up the place so long their own. A great battle was in progress, but the sun was slowly, surely winning, and driving them back to their Jotunheim. At every hollow and shady place they made another stand, or sneaked back by night, only to suffer another defeat. Hard hitters these, as they are stubborn fighters. Many a granite rock was split and shattered by their blows and reckless fight, so that its inner fleshy tints were shown and warmly gleamed among the gray-green rocks that dotted the plain, like the countless flocks of Tua. More or less of these may be found at every place a battle brunt, and straggled along the slope of Sulaten was a host that reached for half a mile. But stay, these moved. Not rocks were they, but living creatures. They drifted along erratically, yet one way, all up the wind. They swept out of sight in a hollow, to reappear on a ridge much nearer, and serried there against the sky. We marked their branching horns, and knew them for the reindeer in their home. The band came drifting our way, feeding like sheep, grunting like only themselves. Each one found a grazing spot, stood there till it was cleared off, then trotted on crackling hoofs to the front in search of another. So the band was ever changing in rank and form. But one there was that was always at or near the Van, a large and well-favored Simla, or Hind. However much the band might change and spread, she was in the forefront, and the observant would soon have seen signs that she had had an influence over the general movement, that she, indeed, was the leader. Even the big bucks in their huge velvet-clad antlers admitted this untitular control, and if one, in a spirit of independence, evinced a disposition to lead elsewhere, he soon found himself uncomfortably alone. The Varsimle, or leading hind, had kept the band hovering for the last week or two along the timber line, going higher each day to the bearing uplands, where the snow was clearing and the deer flies were blown away. As the pasture zone had climbed, she had fouled in her daily foraging, returning to the sheltered woods at sundown, for the wild things fear the cold night wind even as man does. But now the deer flies were rife in the woods and the rocky hillside nooks warm enough for the nightly bivouac, so the woodland was deserted. Probably the leader of a band of animals does not consciously pride itself on leadership, yet has an uncomfortable sensation when not followed. But there are times, with all, when solitude is sought. The Varsimle'a had been fat and well through the winter, yet now was listless, and lingered with drooping head as the grazing herd moved past her. Sometimes she stood gazing blankly while the unchewed bunch of moss hung from her mouth, then roused to go on to the front as before, but the spells of vacant stare and the hankering to be alone grew stronger. She turned downward to seek the birchwoods, but the whole band turned with her. She stood stock still with head down. They grazed and grunted past, leaving her like a statue against the hillside. When all had gone on, she slunk quietly away, walked a few steps, looked about, made a pretense of grazing, snuffed the ground, looked after the herd, and scanned the hills, then downward fared toward the sheltering woods. Once, as she peered over a bank, she sighted another Simla, a doe reindeer, uneasily wandering by itself. But the Varsimle'a wished not for company. She did not know why, but she felt that she must hide away somewhere. She stood still until the other had passed on, then turned aside and went with faster steps and less wavering, till she came in view of Utrovan, away down by the little stream that turns Old Svegum's Ribsten. Up above the dam she waded across the limpid stream, for deep laid and sure is the instinct of a wild animal to put running water between itself and those it shuns. Then, on the farther bank, now bare and slightly green, she turned, and passing in and out among the twisted trunks, she left the noisy Vandam. On the higher ground beyond she paused, looking this way and that, went on a little, but returned, and here, completely shut in by softly painted rocks and birches wearing little springtime hangers, she seemed inclined to rest. Yet not to rest, for she stood uneasily this way and that, driving away the flies that settled on her legs, heeding not at all the growing grass, and thinking she was hid from all the world. But nothing escapes the Fosca. He had seen her leave the herd, and now he sat on a gorgeous rock that overhung, and sang as though he had waited for this, and knew that the fate of the nation might turn on what passed in this far glen. He sang, "Skål, skål, for Norway skål, sing ye the song of the Vandam troll, when I am hiding, Norway's luck, and a white storbuck comes riding, riding." There are no storks in Norway, and yet an hour later there was a wonderful little reindeer lying beside the Varsimle'a. She was brushing his coat, licking and mothering him, proud and happy, as though this was the first little Renskalv ever born. There might be hundreds born in the herd that month, but probably no more like this one, for he was snowy white, and the song of the singer on the painted rock was about, good luck, and a white storbuck, as though he foresaw clearly the part that the white calf was to play when he grew to be a storbuck. But another wonder now came to pass. Before an hour there was a second little calf, a brown one this time. Strange things happen, and hard things are done when they needs must. 2 hours later, when the Varsimle'a led the white calf away from the place, there was no brown calf, only some flattened rags with calf hair on them. The mother was wise. Better one strongling than two weaklings. Within a few days, the Simla once more led the band, and running by her side was the white calf. Varsimle'a considered him in all things, so that he really set the pace for the band, which suited very well all the mothers that now had calves with them. Big, strong, and wise was the Varsimle'a, and the pride of her strength, and this white calf was the flower of her prime. He often ran ahead of his mother as she led the herd, and Rol, coming on them one day, laughed aloud at the sight as they passed, old and young, fat Simla and antlered Storbuk, a great brown herd, all led, as it seemed, by a little white calf. So they drifted away to the high mountains, to be gone all summer, gone to be taught by the spirits who dwell where the black loon laughs on the ice, said Leif of the lower dale. But Svegum, who had always been among the reindeer, said, "Their mothers are the teachers, even as ours are." When the autumn came, old Svegum saw a moving snow flock far off on the brown moorland, but the troll saw a white yearling, a neckbook, and when they ranged alongside of Utrovand to drink, the still sheet seemed fully to reflect the white one, though it barely sketched in the others with the dark hills behind. Many a little calf had come that spring, and had drifted away on the moss barrens, to come back no more, for some were weaklings and some were fools. Some fell by the way, for that is law, and some would not learn the rules, and so died. But the white calf was the strongest of them all, and he was wise, so he learned of his mother, who was wisest of them all. He learned that the grass on the sun side of a rock is sweet, and though it looks the same in the dark hollows, it is there worthless. He learned that when his mother's hoofs crackled, he must be up and moving, and when all the herd's hoofs crackled, there was danger, and he must keep by his mother's side. For this crackling is like the whistling of a whistler duck's wings, is to keep the kinds together. He learned that where the little bomwood blomster hangs its cotton tufts is dangerous bog, that the harsh keckle the ptarmigan means that close at hand are eagles, as dangerous for fawn as for birds. He learned that the little troll berries are deadly, that when the vera flies come stinging he must take refuge on a snow patch, and that of all animal smells only that of his mother was to be fully trusted. He learned that he was growing. His flat calf sides and big joints were changing to the full barrel and clean limbs of the yearling, and the little bumps which began to show in his head when he was only a fortnight old were now sharp, hard spikes that could win in fight. More than once they had smelt that dreaded destroyer of the north that men call the Yarv or Wolverine. And one day, as this danger scent came suddenly and in great strength, a huge blot of dark brown sprang rumbling from a rocky ledge, and straight for the foremost, the white calf. His eye caught the flash of a whirling, shaggy mass, with gleaming teeth and eyes, hot-breathed and ferocious. Blank horror set his hair on end, his nostrils fleared in fear, but before he fled there rose within another feeling, one of anger at the breaker of his peace, a sense that swept all fear away, braced his legs, and set his horns a charge. The brown brute landed with a deep-chested growl to be received on the young one's spikes. They pierced him deeply, but the shock was overmuch. It bore the white one down, and he might yet have been killed, but that his mother, alert, never near, now charged the attacking monster, and heavier, better arm, she hurled and speared him to the ground. And the white calf, with a very demon glare in his once mild eyes, charged too, and, even after the wolverine was a mere hairy mass, and his mother had retired to feed, he came snorting out his rage to drive his spikes into the hateful thing, till his snowy head was stained with his adversary's blood. Thus he showed that below the ox-like calm exterior was the fighting beast, that he was like the men of the north, rugged, square-built, calm, slow to wrath, but when aroused, seeing red. When they ranked together by the lake that fall, the Fólskáll sang his old song. When I am hiding, Norway's luck on a white storbuck comes riding, riding, as though this was something he had awaited, then disappeared, no one knew where. Old Svegum had seen it flying through the stream, as birds fly through the air, walking in the bottom of a deep pond, as a ptarmigan walks on the rocks, living as no bird can live. And now the old man said it had simply gone southward for the winter. But old Svegum could neither read nor write. How should he know?
End of section 15.